All right, our next case is 2020-1009 in the matter of the application of Suvon LLC DBA First Energy Advisors for certification as a competitive retail electric service power broker and aggregator in Ohio. For the appellant, Northeast Ohio Public Energy Council and Office of the Ohio Consumers Council, we will first hear from Mr. Stinson.
Thank you, Chief Justice O'Connor and Associate Justices. May it please the court, my name is Dane Stinson and I represent Appellant Northeast Ohio Public Energy Council, or NOPEC. I'd like to reserve 4 minutes of appellant's time for the Office of the Ohio Consumers Council and an additional 3 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honors, NOPEC is a regional council of governments made up of 240 member communities. It's certified by the PUCO to provide competitive retail electric service to more than 500,000 customers in 20 Ohio counties. In the case before you, First Energy Advisors also applied to the PUCO to become a competitive retail electric service provider. In its application, First Energy Advisors proposed sharing senior management with its affiliates. Those affiliates are the monopoly First Energy Utilities. All three managers of First Energy Advisors were also employees of the utilities. Two of the managers, Charles Jones and Stephen Straw, were also directors of the utilities. The third manager, Dennis Schock, was the utilities president. Now, First Energy has since fired Charles Jones and Dennis Schock for the roles in the House Bill 6 bribery scandal that has rocked the State House and the PUCO in recent months. According to appellee's brief, they were fired for failing to comply with First Energy's internal code of conduct. Now, Ohio has specific statutes and rules and its own code of conduct that governs a utility's relationship with a competitive affiliate. The code of conduct is in place to assure that a utility cannot provide its affiliate with a competitive advantage in the electric marketplace. This appeal addresses these statutes and rules and presents questions of law for the court to review de novo. Ohio's utility code of conduct prohibits a utility from sharing employees if the employees do not contemporaneously share information about the utility's operations with all other competitive providers. First Energy Advisors' sharing of senior management is a violation of the code of conduct. This is because First Energy Advisors' senior management necessarily would receive instantaneous information about the utility's operations well before other competitive providers, if the other competitive providers even receive the information at all. Now, for example, consider a new residential subdivision or a major corporation that contacts the utility to string distribution wires for new electric service. Because of its shared management, First Energy Advisors necessarily would know of this business opportunity before other competitive providers. That gives First Energy Advisors a competitive advantage to secure energy supply for the new project before its competitors.
Council, is there evidence that there was that kind of crossover of information and sharing of information?
Your Honor, we have been denied rights to discovery in this proceeding, so we don't have any specific facts on how that operates. We believe from the fact that the senior management team of the utility are the same, it's impossible to separate that information within the minds of those three managers. Now, to approve a certification application, the PCO must determine whether First Energy Advisors' management team is fit and capable of providing service. A management team cannot be fit and capable of providing service if it violates the code of conduct shared employees rules. The management team would be disqualified. However, the PUCO didn't bother to resolve this legitimate issue before allowing First Energy Advisors to operate. Worse, it shielded First Energy Advisors from discovery and hearing that would have developed a record on this legitimate and material issue. Your Honors, at this point in time, when First Energy's conduct involving House Bill 6 threatens the public trust and governmental institutions The public needs the transparency that due process provides. NOPEC and the seven other interveners who requested hearing in this case were denied due process at every turn.
Counsel, now, is there any, if you weren't, you say you were denied the access to information you were seeking. Do you have any example of a project, a development, a new build, whatever, where there was some preferential treatment or, some competitive advantage from this provider or that this provider had? And, not saying where that advantage came from, but is there anything specific?
I have to go back, Your Honor, to the fact that NOPEC and the other interveners in this case, the seven other interveners, mm-hmm. were denied discovery. We are unable to develop a complete record on that issue.
So the answer is no.
The answer is we don't have that information due to lack the ability not to have discovery.
What about the fact that PUCO had to act within 90 days and it was about 2 months before discovery requests were actually made?
I'm sorry, I didn't understand.
What about the fact that the PUCO cites that it had to act within 90 days and that discovery requests weren't made? I'm assuming you intervened probably in January and that discovery requests weren't made for about 2 months.
Well, Your Honor, there's a process to submit discovery. We submitted discovery in February of 2020, shortly after we intervened. There was a process that requires consultation between the parties before a motion to compel is filed. NOPEC filed its motion to compel on March 20th. The PUCO is stating that a decision had to be rendered in this case by May 11th. Now, the PUCO had the opportunity to go ahead and order a hearing in this case even shortly after the application was filed, and it had the opportunity to require that discovery be provided to the parties, in our case, in March before, with almost 2 months left. The other issue on that point, Your Honor, is that the PUCO never intended, in this case, to grant any motion to compel discovery. The staff report, the staff recommendation was filed in this case on April 7th. NOPEC responded to that staff report on April 14th. The commission staff placed this order on the commission's agenda on April 22. That would have given the commission approximately 19 days for discovery and hearing. So the commission never had any intent to grant any motion to compel. It sat on that motion until it approved the application. As we noted in our brief as well, that the rules for that 90-day process had been suspended by the commission due to the pandemic. In any event, Your Honors, I think as well that with the severe allegations in this case about non-compliance with the PUCO's rules, the commission could very well have denied the application, have required First Energy Advisors to resubmit its application for discovery and hearing.
Thank you.
Counsel, you've got 7 minutes left, and I know that you have a time split here.
I'm just going to finish up real quickly so my OCC can get involved here. I just want to say a bit about the rules that provide discretion to hold a hearing in the case. The issue in this case is whether the PUCO abused the discretion, and NOPEC, and obviously, first, the commission did abuse its discretion in this case. The only reason it approved the application because it was concerned with the harm to First Energy Advisors by the delay in its commencement of operations. The commission never considered the harm to the competitive market by permitting First Energy Advisors to operate with a shared management. That's a classic textbook example of an abuse of discretion by being partial to First Energy Advisors. At this point, I'll turn over my time to counsel for OCC.
Thank you. All right, Ms. O'Brien, are you going to save minutes for rebuttal?
No, Your Honor, Mr. Stinson will be doing the rebuttal.
Okay, you've got 7 minutes left and he's reserved rebuttal time, so keep that in mind.
Okay. Chief Justice O'Connor and Associate Justices, may it please the court. My name is Angela O'Brien. I am counsel for the Office of the Ohio Consumers Council on behalf of Ohio residential utility consumers. OCC supports Mr. Stinson's arguments for NOPEC. Today's appeals involve questions of law. The court should not defer to the PUCO. I will address how the PUCO's order violates RC 4903-082 regarding discovery rights and RC 4903.09 regarding complete records and cases. The issues in this case affect fair competition for energy services, and that affects consumers who the legislature intended should benefit from fair competition. First Energy has led a charmed life at the PUCO regarding corporate separation issues involving a utility affiliate like First Energy Advisors. Indeed, the legal problems in the case below are magnified by the fact that the PUCO did not even issue a decision on the original issues in First Energy's general corporate separation case that has been pending since 2017. RC 4903.082 expressly states that, quote, all parties and interveners shall be granted ample rights of discovery. The Ohio Administrative Code further provides that, quote, any party to a commission proceeding may obtain discovery of any matter not privileged which is relevant to the subject matter of the proceeding. In an earlier OCC appeal where the court reversed the PUCO, the court recognized that the PUCO's rules should be, quote, liberally construed to allow for broad discovery of any unprivileged matter relevant to the subject matter of the pending proceeding.
Counsel, you have those discovery rules. You also have the expedited timeline for this process. So, you know, why didn't you proceed more quickly with discovery knowing what the timeline was?
Yes, Your Honor. As Mr. Stinson said, NOPEC presented served discovery. They served a lot of discovery that would have been duplicative of OCC's. OCC followed up with discovery later on in the process. And First Energy Advisors flatly refused to respond to any of NOPEC's discovery or any of OCC's discovery. There's a process required by the commission's rules to proceed with motions to compel discovery that requires informal conversations with the counsel from whom you're seeking discovery or from the party you're seeking discovery. And we went through those procedures. So despite the law and the court precedent, the PUCO never ruled on OCC's and NOPEC's motions to compel First Energy Advisors to answer our discovery. First Energy Advisors objected to all our discovery. So the PUCO protected First Energy Advisors from discovery instead of protecting consumers by enforcing our discovery rights. That brings us to RC 4903.09, which requires the PUCO to make a complete record. A complete record was not made, which we needed to build the record. We were next shocked to learn that the PUCO commissioners issued their order without a hearing. So the record in this case reflected the staff report and it reflected First Energy Advisors' application. With that one-sided record, it seems almost preordained that First, oh, I'm sorry.
What was the nature of the staff report? Was it extensive or was it sparse?
It was sparse, Your Honor. It was two paragraphs. And it basically reflected the fact that First Energy Advisors filled out the application to apply for a certificate. It did not address the corporate separation issues that NOPEC or OCC raised at all.
Thank you.
So with that one-sided record, it seems almost preordained that First Energy Advisors prevailed. The PUCO's process violated RC 4903.09. Especially in the wake of the House Bill 6 scandal, consumers deserve justice from the PUCO under the law. They didn't get justice in this case. The court should reverse the PUCO's order and remand in accordance with OCC's and NOPEC's arguments. Thank you.
What is the status of First Energy Providers now?
First Energy Advisors?
I'm sorry, Advisors. Thank you.
Yes, Your Honor. They are currently certificated to provide competitive brokering and aggregation services, and they are currently providing service.
Under the same name?
Yes.
Did you raise on rehearing your argument that the commission erred when it found that you failed to expeditiously prosecute discovery?
Did we raise on rehearing?
Yeah.
We raised the discovery issue, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Ms. Kern?
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the court. I'm Kyle Kern, Assistant Attorney General. I represent the commission. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes of time for counsel for Suvan. Your Honors, this proceeding before the commission was a straightforward initial certification case under 4928.08. And under the law, the commission was to certify that the applicant had the managerial, technical, and financial capability to provide service and avoid default. That is what the commission did.
How can we review that determination when there's no findings or anything for us to review?
Your Honor, the Ohio Administrative Code is clear what an applicant to a certification case must include in their application.
So we should just go through their application and review it kind of de novo, since there's really nothing in the commission record?
The commission found, they adopted the staff report, which found that Suvan had...
The staff report is what, 3 paragraphs long?
Yes, Your Honor, but perhaps the more significant thing about the staff report is that it does not include any questions about Suvan's managerial, technical, and financial capability. There is no notation of any information that was missing or that the application was incomplete. There is no requirement in the statute that there even be a staff report, so the length is really insignificant here. It's the fact that the commission staff thoroughly reviewed the application and the application was complete.
Well, there is a requirement that the commission explain the reasons for its decision, right?
Yes, Your Honor. And with respect to this case,
that reason was simply that no one's challenged anything. Is that pretty much the
yes.
sum of it?
Appellants never materially challenged the core issue of this case.
Was it their burden?
No, Your Honor, and the burden never shifted to the appellant in this case. It always remained with Suvan. You can tell that from the commission's decision, where they said that Suvan had the managerial, technical, and financial capability to provide service.
Was the incestuous relationship known to the PUCO between the leadership at First Energy and the First Energy Advisors when it was being reviewed?
Your Honors, yes, the information about the management for Suvan was known. It was never not disclosed to the commission.
Well, all right, so it's disclosed and there was no concern sua sponte that there was some conflict at the very least here?
Thank you, Your Honor. This case is not about corporate separation issues. It's not about shared service employees or trade names. The commission has a separate docket for First Energy Corporation's corporate separation plan, where they have determined in their broad discretion and expertise that is the best place to look at those issues. The certification statute for a competitive retail electric supplier is narrow. It's looking at managerial capability. Do they have that baseline managerial skill to be able to be a CREST provider in Ohio? It has nothing to do with shared service employees.
Well, all right, wait a minute. You got a board of advisors. First Energy Advisors has advisors. Am I right? And those advisors are First Energy corporate top of the ladder people, right?
Correct,
so
Your Honor.
Isn't that part of the analysis for competent management?
Not in this context, Your Honor. That is a corporate separation issue. And with respect to your specific question on shared service employees, the commission notes in its decision that it has allowed this on many occasions in the past. It does not go against commission precedent to allow shared service employees, nor is it on its face unlawful. There is no Ohio law that prohibits the use of shared service employees unless there is a code of conduct violation. The appropriate place to examine code of conduct violations would be in the context of a corporate separation case that actually arises under the corporate separation statute, 4928.17. This is a certification case. If we look at this as an analogy we're all familiar with, we get a driver's license. That's the first step. And then we have to comply with the law. So this was the first step of the process. Of course, Suvan has to comply with the law. And the commission has mechanisms that they can...
Before they have to comply with the law, doesn't the commission have to find that they're capable of complying with the law?
And they are capable of complying with the law. And this is noted in the commission staff's report. Also, Suvan gave the commitment that they—
Anything beyond just a conclusory statement saying that?
Well, Your Honor, in the Ohio Administrative Code, when there's a reference to capable complying with rules and orders, it's still in the context of managerial, technical, and financial capability, which are the statutory requirements in 4928.08.
Right, I guess what I struggle with is I don't see anything in the commission's findings other than a blanket conclusory statement that they're capable of doing that. There's no explanation, there's no analysis, there's nothing there.
Your Honor, I would suggest that the commission has looked at hundreds of these types of initial certification cases, and they certainly know what information that they're looking for. The Ohio Administrative Code is pretty specific with that.
But how do we know what information they know that they're looking for if they don't tell us what they looked at, what they evaluated?
Well, the record is complete, and the Ohio Administrative Code states specifically what the commission must review in order to make a determination.
So do you think we should just really not review these at all then? Because there's obviously nothing for us to review here. So is this kind of the thing that's, these are just are unreviewable? Is that what you're saying?
I would suggest that the General Assembly, the intent was to get applicants to market. And that is evident in the fact that if the commission would have done nothing, on the 31st day, this application would have been approved. So the law tilts toward approving these applications. It's very
as long as all the lines are filled in and the signatures are on it, that's pretty much all that's necessary for approval.
As long as the information that's required by the Ohio Administrative Code is provided, Your Honor, that is correct. The applicant will be certified. However,
so are you saying that this is clearly a ministerial process?
I'm saying the commission clearly reviewed this. They gave themselves the additional time.
Wait. You're saying that they know it when they see it. You're also saying that, you know, the documents were filled out, every line filled in, signatures, etc., and that's all that's necessary. And an analysis is not necessary, and there's no report that would itemize or analyze their application here or their paperwork. So it sounds pretty ministerial to me.
I would agree in that they are looking for the specific information to make sure that it's there. Again, I would note that the commission staff did say they thoroughly reviewed the application and noted that nothing was missing. They didn't note any issues. In fact, they said that they recommended Suvan for certification and that they had the managerial, technical, and financial capability to provide service. I do want to stress that this is not a corporate separation.
Ms. Kern, you've said that already, but how do you have discovery and a motion to compel in a ministerial process?
Your Honor, there's two points on these procedural arguments. First, that the statute does not mention hearing except with respect to renewals in Section D or suspension. So the commission had broad discretion. They had discretion here whether they would have a hearing at this stage. That would be highly atypical to have a hearing at an initial certification stage. Discovery isn't mentioned at all.
But they allowed intervention.
I think the main point on these issues is that the commission did not need any information. They didn't need additional information.
My point is, once the commission allowed intervention, it was turning this into at least a quasi-judicial proceeding, which was one of its options to do. And so why the rush?
Well, Your Honor, the rush is actually in the letter of the law. Assembly.
Yes, the letter of the law was already lifted because of COVID. So there really wasn't that 90-day situation. Why the rush? Why no record?
Your Honor, there is a complete record, and it includes the application, the supplemental materials, and the commission staff's report recommending certification. The emergency order does contemplate that the commission would continue working on cases, so that didn't toll this specific case. Again, the timing issue that appellants have is an issue that they perhaps should look at the General Assembly for answers to. The commission was complying with the timeline. And here, I think the most important point, the commission had the information it needed to make the determination that Sivan should be certified. It did not need to have a hearing. It didn't need to go further. So it was the commission did what it was supposed to under the law. I see that my time has concluded here.
I have one more question.
Sure.
So my familiarity with the commission's processes are that the application process often involves a lot of collaboration between the applicant and the commission staff, so that by the time the application is actually submitted, it's in the shape that the staff wants to see it. Would that be a reason why the staff had such a short 2 or 3 paragraph recommendation to the commission?
Your Honor, I don't think the length is of any significance here. And I did look at a few other dockets that were initial certification proceedings. And this staff report is not any different than those staff reports.
No, I'm asking about pre-application collaboration between the utility as the applicant and the commission staff. That happens regularly, correct?
It does in some cases. In this case, Your Honor, I think it's more regimented because the Ohio Administrative Code is specific of what's to be included. In fact, the commission actually has a form for these types of proceedings, and the applicant has control over how they answer the prompts in the form, but the commission actually has a form. So I don't know that there was, I'm not aware of collaboration between staff and the applicant in this case. And I think the purpose of the staff report was just to let the commission know that it had reviewed the application and there weren't any issues, and that they recommended a certification. And in closing, Your Honors, this case is a certification case that deals with managerial, technical, and financial capability. It's not about corporate separation or market power or competitive issues, as appellants have argued. The commission's decision is
lawful. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Trevor Alexander, counsel for First Energy Advisors. I think the key point here is that the appellant's argument is completely dependent on the use of a trade name or the use of shared service employees being an automatic violation of Ohio law, making the management structure incapable of complying with the commission's orders. There is simply no support for that position. The commission has repeatedly ruled that the use of shared service employees is appropriate. The Ohio Administrative Code 4901.137.04 expressly anticipates the use of shared service employees. There's nothing inappropriate about that.
All right, do they anticipate the level of involvement of the caliber of First Energy employees with the First Energy advisors? Is that standard operating procedure where the folks at the top of the food chain are calling shots with the advisors?
Your Honor, the Administrative Code corporate separation rules prohibit actions, not people. And so there's certain actions which—
I understand what you're saying. But I'm asking whether this is standard operating procedure. You just said it's common to have this kind of a relationship. And I'm asking you, in other, businesses such as what First Energy Advisors are, providers, is it common to have, again, this level of expertise and status at the energy company to be their advisors?
Absolutely, Your Honor. For example, First Energy Solutions, who was formerly in contract with NOPEC, had a very similar structure, which NOPEC did not object to. We can also look at the cases cited by the commission for companies like Dominion Retail, AEP Energy, Veteran Energy, Duke Energy. These were all cited by the commission. This is incredibly common. And so the only way you get to these other arguments that are raised by appellants is if the court supersedes the commission's decision to control its own docket and consider the allegations of inappropriate behavior in the corporate separation audit case. And let's talk about that, because I think it's important. We're not leaving appellants without a mechanism to have these issues heard. Appellants have an audit case which is currently pending, which they're allowed to participate in, which they are allowed to conduct discovery. There has been a commission decision to take the Sivan application into account and have judicial notice of that application. And so this is expressly teed up. These issues will be heard. They will have the day in court. But it's not an appropriate issue for this case. For this case,
why is shared officership and so forth not relevant to managerial, financial, and technical ability to be certified?
Because I guess there's two parts. First, it's relevant to whether the individuals have the relevant expertise, because the applicant has the burden to show that they have the relevant expertise to serve as a competitive retail electric supplier. So it is relevant there. But it is also relevant to see if they are somehow automatically incapable of fulfilling that role, because it would necessarily be a violation of the corporate separation rules. Here, there is no authority. The appellants have cited nothing saying that those actions are somehow an automatic violation. Instead, they have used non-record evidence and made ad hominem attacks against the company.
But would they need discovery to do that? I mean, seems like they might.
I don't think I would agree, Your Honor, solely because discovery would relate to the actions of those employees. What actions did they take? Did they take some action which violated Ohio law? The fact that they are employees of our shared service employees is stipulated. It's in the application itself.
Stipulated between whom?
I'm sorry, Your Honor?
Stipulated between whom?
Well, we would stipulate. It's clear on the face of the application that these are shared service employees.
So did you stipulate it with the PUCO, or did you stipulate it with NOPEC and OCC, or did you stipulate it with yourself?
It's listed in the application, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Thank you. Your time has expired, Mr. Alexander.
Thank you, Your Honor.
All right, Mr. Simpson, you are the rebuttal, and it looks like you have less than a minute. I'll give you 2 minutes. Mr. Simpson, my first question, Mr. Alexander has told us that all of your concerns can be more appropriately addressed in the audit case, which is ongoing and which you are a participant in, as well as your colleagues. Is that accurate?
That is completely false, Your Honor. First of all, remember that First Energy Advisors is not a party to the corporate separation case.
And also, why is that?
It was a docket initiated against the First Energy Utility. The auditor in that case reviewed the relationship between First Energy Utilities and the former affiliate First Energy Services. First Energy Advisors has never been made a party to the case and hasn't moved to intervene. One thing I want to clarify is the question of law at issue in this case. Now, the PUCO has to affirmatively find that First Energy Advisors management team is fit and capable of providing service and fit and capable of complying with the PUCO's rules. The legal question is, in making that determination, whether the PUCO must consider whether shared management is violating the code of conduct. If so, management is disqualified. If it's disqualified, it's not fit to provide service, and the application should have been denied. Now, in this case, the PUCO acknowledged that First Energy Advisors' shared management structure remains an open issue. The PUCO granted First Energy Advisors' application, being fully aware that First Energy Advisors could be violating Ohio law currently. I think that's outrageous. The PUCO should have permitted discovery and held a hearing in this case before First Energy Advisors was allowed to operate.
Counsel, so let me ask this. Mr. Alexander said that this is standard operating procedure, AEP, all the energy companies are identifying their top-notch employees to be advisors to businesses such as First Energy Advisors. And it's done all the time, and it's obviously no problem with the PUCO. Is that accurate?
Your Honor, I don't have the information about the other utilities' executive management and how they're shared. If we would have had discovery in this case in a hearing, maybe First Energy Advisors could have provided that information.
Well, what about NOPEC? Do you have advisors that are part of the utility structure?
No, we're completely separate from the utilities, Your Honor. That's the whole point, is that the corporation separation requirements are required to govern the relationship between the incumbent monopoly utility and its competitive provider. NOPEC and hundreds of other companies are completely separate from the utility.
All right. Okay. Then I get the message loud and clear is because First Energy was under this cloud, that should have, heightened the awareness of the PUCO in their review of this application. Is that accurate?
I think that's still true, Your Honor, that First Energy remains under a cloud. If you look at the appellee's brief, the appellee contains an order where the corporate separation docket has been expanded to consider those House Bill 6 violations of whether they protruded into the PUCO or rate making issues.
But that's a whole different investigation and consideration, correct?
It's a part of the corporate separation investigation that the PUCO wants to put this issue to.
Counsel, okay. The decision in this case by the PUCO, was it made before or after the allegations about House Bill 6 became public?
I believe it was made before the allegations were public, Your Honor.
Thank you.
Well, if it was before the allegations were public, what's to heighten their awareness?
Your Honor, I think at this point, the commission's awareness should be heightened because it's considering this issue in the corporate separation case.
Well, that's a different case.
It's the same case we're going to be involved in and what the PC.
Okay, all right, I understand that, but we're looking at the application case here, and you're telling, and what I'm hearing is this is just a ministerial fill in the blanks, sign on the dotted line, and we're going to rubber stamp your application as long as we feel that you've got the managerial, the capital, et cetera. And that's what is being portrayed here by the PUCO. And if they were not aware of the alleged abuses of the House Bill 6, how does this heighten their awareness or trigger a closer look or some kind of delving into the management issue because of the, again, cloud over First Energy?
Your Honor, first of all, I want to remark that the moment that NOPEC intervened in this proceeding and NOPEC's intervention was not contested by First Energy advisors and the PUCO granted that intervention, at that point, it was a contested proceeding. And the PUCO had to support this decision with facts under revised code 4903.09. It never did. It only made broad conclusory statements as this was a ministerial proceeding, and it's not. It's a contested proceeding.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Simpson.
Thank you, Your Honor.
You've used your time. Thank you. We will take the matter under advisement and you'll be notified of our decision. Thank you, counsel. Marshall, will you call a 10-minute recess, please?
The court will now adjourn for a 10-minute recess.